Now, are all the traitors present? Let's get started, shall we?
From rags to riches.
I'm so sick of this.
Working like a dog and being treated worse.
Yorkshire to New York.
We're climbers, you and me.
A life dedicated to revenge.
Let's make this an occasion to remember.
A Woman of Substance on Channel 4. Stream now.
Right now, we live in a culture that glorifies exhaustion. People brag about sleeping for hours. They wear burnout like a badge of honor. They think that being busy means successful. But what if it was the exact opposite? Now, what if the thing was that it was actually destroying your productivity, your creativity, and your mental health? What is sleep deprivation? And today's guest believes that achievement itself can become an addiction, and that it actually may high performers are actually running on anxiety because they lack sleep. Now, Megan, I am so glad you're here because there's so many people out there that, you know, they think they have to do it. They have to get accomplished. They gotta get it done, but they're actually destroying themselves and they're not even realizing it. You know, I just want to jump to the gun though, because this is such an important topic because there's so many people that listen to us and they want to know more about anxiety, about stress, about the importance of sleep, about burnout, because these are things that people are going through on an everyday basis. So I just want to ask you a question. Why do so many ambitious people believe exhaustion equals success?
Well, the exhaustion and the sleep deprivation, and again, wearing it like a badge of honor, is kind of a warped sense of balance and achievement and success. I think that the true mark of success is when you do have work-life balance and you can achieve what you want to achieve in a reasonable amount of time during the day, and then dedicating the rest of your time to rest and recovery. Simply, like our professional athletes, they dedicate most of their time when they're not performing to rest and recovery. And people who work, they use their brains. And our brains, even though they're only 2% of our body weight, actually use 20% of our energy. So it is time to change the narrative to treating work like a sport, where rest and recovery are equally critical to success as productivity and achievement. And I want to double click on something that you said about achievement being a socially acceptable form of addiction. Mobilization in general is a trauma response. And so sometimes when we're not getting what we need emotionally, we'll take a detour of achievement. And that busyness and that mobilization and that constant doing leave us time to sit with our thoughts. On top of that, you are creating a mental health crisis by not sleeping, because one night of being underslept, and the body wakes up at baseline anxiety because it increases norepinephrine, which is the neurotransmitter and hormone that increases heart rate, blood sugar, and blood pressure. The World Health Organization has declared sleep deprivation an epidemic in every industrialized country. And in our country, the CDC concurs that 1 in 3 adults are not getting enough sleep. So how are we supposed to go around achieving, adulting, and humaning when 30% of us are living at baseline anxiety?
You know, it's so crazy. Now, you make a bold statement. You say achieving can be a trauma response. Now, that's fascinating. Like, what do you actually mean by that?
Well, think about this. Have you ever tried to do a yoga class or meditate, but you're like, yeah, I just can't. I just can't sit still. I just can't move that slowly. I am seeking external stimulation. I'm also seeking external validation because it doesn't leave me alone with my thoughts. The thoughts might be uncomfortable. And in our society, we are not conditioned or prepared in any way to sit in discomfort. We have kind of an epidemic of convenience and instant gratification and numbing through doing or shopping or any of the other addictions or compulsions that aren't as socially acceptable achievement.
Why do so many people feel uncomfortable with slowing down? Because, so many people I find they don't know how to slow down and they feel really uncomfortable trying to figure out how to, reach out and get support to learn how to actually slow down.
It is a process. And I have to say that yoga really helped me to begin to slow down in my early 20s. And I had tried it multiple times, and I was like, no, I'm gonna be good at yoga. So again, this was just a compulsion to achieve something, to like be good at something. But in the end, I was in Shavasana, which is the resting pose. And I realized for the first time in my adult life, I completely relaxed. And I could never remember a feeling or a sensation like that. So, for people who would like to train themselves to slow down and to sit in discomfort, I highly recommend yoga because the whole concept of yoga is to put yourself in these asanas or these kind of weird, uncomfortable positions and then breathe through the discomfort. And neuroscience has proven that when you breathe through discomfort for 90 seconds, it tells your nervous system that you're going to be okay. So this process creates resilience. It can also create emotional resilience because sometimes it's uncomfortable to sit with certain emotions. And the other thing that's really great about yoga is it is better than the standard of care for every chronic disease in the Western medical model. So it reduces inflammation. It does all the things that you want to achieve by meditating, but you don't have to actually just sit still. You can still be in motion, but noticing the body, noticing the breath, and really tuning in to your inner world is great practice, moving towards a stillness or a pause. And the sleep system, it does methodically help you to start to relax into sleep. Again, back to the neuroscience, right? So it uses neuroplasticity, or the brain's ability to create new neural nets associated with sensorial cues. So it uses the five senses as well in each of the 21 evidence-based sleep hygiene practices that are in the book. And the other part about the neuroplasticity and the neuroscience of getting to stillness, besides the five senses, is the analog nature
Yes.
of noticing. It is a citizen science project where each day has prompts, and you have to hand write with a pen and paper
Yeah.
what you noticed about your sleep, dreams, how long it took you to fall asleep, when you woke up in the morning, what did you feel like?
Yeah.
And so it's really fascinating how we see a lot of the time our brains working against us
Yes.
when we embrace our biological need to sleep. The brain rewards us and enriches everything we do.
Right.
And I wanted to touch on why sleep is actually a biological imperative.
Yes.
This is fascinating because only when you sleep can certain processes happen, and they cannot be replaced by a supplement. Because I am the first one to be like, oh yeah, I could just take a vitamin for that, right?
Right.
So what happens when we sleep is our brain cells actually shrink.
Yeah.
So the glymphatic system can send cerebral spinal fluid through the hallways of the brain.
Right.
And it's cleaning out these plaques and proteins and amyloids that are associated with poor cognitive health outcomes.
Right.
Not just long term poor cognitive health outcomes, it's also short term, where if you sleep like 6 hours instead of eight,
Yeah.
it shows 5% more deposits remaining of those
Wow.
amyloids and those plaques and proteins associated with poor cognitive health outcomes. So again, sleep is irreplaceable. It also reduces inflammation. It helps the cardiovascular system get a reset. So that's when blood pressure goes down. Again, there's just no substitute for sleep.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm so excited about sleep, because really it can mitigate or even cure some chronic conditions that right now people are being medicated for
Yeah.
their entire lives.
It is so true. There's so many people on medications for sleep and for stress and for, so many different reasons. And, the side effects are tremendous. And, you don't have to be on medications to learn how to actually sleep and get into a relaxed level of calmness where you could actually even fall into a REM, sleep and be able to renew your body and reset your body. The World Health Organization has declared that sleep deprivation is a global epidemic. And, like we mentioned earlier, about one in three aren't getting enough of sleep. So what actually happens in the body when someone is chronically underslept?
Yeah, when you're chronically underslept, it just adds up to exhaustion, brain fog. So your cognitive abilities fall. Your short-term memory is not being consolidated into long-term memory. So you'll have trouble actually learning something new or a new skill. And it increases the norepinephrine, which increases inflammation. So you have a buildup of cortisol, and it creates the conditions for lots of cytokines, which is
Yeah.
the inflammatory conditions. And it really puts the body into a state of anxiety. And just being in this physical state of anxiety, and chronically underslept people can develop severe anxiety that leads to depression.
Wow.
And if you read Dr. Ellen Vora's book, The Anatomy of Anxiety, she actually
Yeah.
names false anxiety, and one of the reasons is sleep deprivation. So it's completely physiological and can be remedied by bringing your awareness to how and when you are sleeping. The other thing about this whole process is that when you are in integrity with your body responds to you differently. And it lets you play full out, not just at work, but at home and in community, in all of your relationships, because you are meeting yourself in integrity. You're increasing your self-love, you're increasing your self-trust, and you're increasing your self-awareness of what parts of me won't slow down? What parts of me won't let me sleep? What parts of me don't want to sit in discomfort? And so when you meet yourself at that depth of understanding, you can meet others there too. And it increases this compassion and this harmonious engagement, which is so important in teams. It's really how we engage. And when we are not in a state of sleep deprivation, in a state of anxiety, we are more authentically available and present and fully engaged because the nervous system is not in a state of fight or flight or freeze. It's in a state of social engagement. So I also think that besides the mental health crisis, the sleep deprivation epidemic is linked to the loneliness epidemic. Because if 30% of us are in a place where we can't relate in a baseline mental health, then how are we actually connecting and relating?
Now, here's something interesting that you mentioned. If 30% of employees are sleep deprived, how does that affect teamwork and company culture?
So it is really eroding and corroding that teamwork and that company culture because when you are sleep deprived at that baseline anxiety, you're just in a state of survival. And this can lead to what's considered presenteeism. And if you haven't heard that term before, it means that you're physically present, but you're not all here. So, yeah, it's really detrimental to productivity. I think it's $136 billion lost in productivity due to sleep deprivation in the workplace.
Now, our businesses unknowingly operating with a workforce that's functioning, like you said, crabby toddlers and angsty teens.
Yes, exactly. And it's amazing. So I was a WELL AP and a WELL faculty, which is the professional wellness designation in the architecture and design industry. And we have two categories in the International WELL Building Institute's WELL certified rating that encourages circadian health. And one of them is light, and it's about getting enough daylight that supports the circadian rhythms, which then later helps you get to sleep at night. But also in the mind category, it talks about sleep support policies. So these companies who are adopting well-certified buildings are actually implementing policies not only with their lighting design and natural light getting into the core of their building footprint, but But they're also optimizing employee policy for sleep health. So let's say someone has a trip overseas and they need to come back and they have jet lag. There are policies in place to support their reacclimating to this time zone.
Oh,
And
that's
it
so
seems
true.
like that is unheard of, but it is so necessary
It
because we're
is.
not designed to fly across time zones and then just pop into work and be a team member. Your resilience is down, your immunity is down, your reactivity is high. So it's really disappointing that we are sometimes team members who are walking around like crabby toddlers and angsty teens because it's not, it's not fun, it's not pleasant, and it doesn't create that harmonious engagement and that teamwork and that team building that you really want to instill when you're engaging employees. So sleep supportive and circadian supportive policies are just so important. If you think, you could be saving $136 billion in productivity.
I guarantee you people don't think of it like that, but it's so true. It is so true.
And if it sounds like maybe, oh, that's a little invasive, my company is like getting into my, sleep health or whatever. The whole idea of the analog nature of the sleep system is that it's private. It's not digital and it's personalized. It's not controlled by an analog, by an algorithm. It is simply between you and your journal, right? And I think that is why it's such a great tool for individuals and for organizations.
Now, most people think better sleep means like go to bed early, stop using your phone. But your book, The Sleep System, approaches sleep differently. You use design thinking. Now, what does it mean to design your sleep?
So it means that you're taking a systems approach. So it's not just at bedtime that you think about sleep. Your circadian health or your circadian rhythm is 24 hours. So you're thinking about what light you get in the morning. You're thinking about how much time between you when you eat your last meal. You're going to bed because that is a cue for your body. You're thinking about when am I dimming 50% of my lights and how am I following the natural rhythms of the day? And so when you design sleep, you're creating a setting and you're creating an environment for your body. Whether it's through your lifestyle, through your home, your bedroom, how it's designed, and also really checking in with the things that you mentioned, which is screen time and bedtime. But specifically, it's about noticing yourself and noticing what cues are helpful, what are healthy sleep hygiene habits, and which habits are detrimental. And we deconstruct all of those sleep habits and reconstruct a healthy sleep hygiene using the neuroplasticity. And the sleep system, I mentioned deconstruction, reconstruction. Because this is a design thinking process that a world-renowned industrial designer, Ishay Bursell, taught me during the pandemic. And so we did an activity called Design the Blank You Love. And I was like, oh, people are having trouble sleeping. Maybe I should help them to design the sleep that they love. So I have to give a shout out to Aishe, and she did endorse the book. So close-minded way that you can apply design thinking to well-being. And I also wrote it as a proof of concept for well-being by design, which is a series of evidence-based frameworks to design life and work and sleep within your parameters to thrive. So again, it's taking that holistic approach and that systems approach that really shows how things are all connected and influencing the quality of your sleep, how long it takes you to fall asleep, and how long you need to sleep. And the systems thinking really meets you where you are. So whatever your chronotype is, whatever your lifestyle is, can fit into it. And it's just really a beautiful project to invest in yourself in creating this relationship with your sleep and your circadian health and your physical and mental health, because sleep is the number one predictor of 100% health outcomes. So we all need to be aware of that.
Now there's a big myth in our culture that means more work equals more success, but elite performers often prioritize recovery. Why is sleep actually a competitive advantage?
Sleep is a competitive advantage when you think about 30% of your competition is not getting enough sleep. It keeps you sharp. It makes not only your mental health recover, but also your physical health. It makes your focus sharper as well, and it makes your task proficiency increase. So even NASA researched sleep and napping specifically for that reason. So a NASA nap is 26 minutes and it increases your task proficiency by 30%. And it increases your alertness by 50%. So it's like, okay, if a 24-minute nap can do that, if a 26-minute nap can do that, like obviously a full night's rest is going to put you at the top of your game. And if you're learning a new skill or you're studying for an exam or a test or a certification, the best time that you can study is right before you go to sleep, because that short-term memory will be consolidated and gelled into your long-term memory. And when you wake up in the morning, you will be 30% better at whatever task or information you were trying to learn. And it also, when you sleep, it stokes creativity. Because what happens is, let's say you are a creative person, an architect or a designer, and you've just learned about the space that you're designing and some design constraints really are kind of difficult and funky to work with. When you go to sleep, what happens is that new information mixes with your long-term memory and what you've done in the past to come up with new solutions. So you, if you are well slept, you're a better problem solver. So yeah, there's so much that, and again, it's really what it comes down to is the quality of your relationships. Because if you can be present and available and resilient and not easily triggered and authentically all there, and the quality of your relationships and your interactions is just going to be so much more satisfying and meaningful and fulfilling. And the quality of our lives is the quality of our relationships, and vice versa. So
that.
you really owe it to yourself and to your fellow humans to just be in that space
Yeah.
of receptivity and creativity and yeah.
I love that. Now, your own journey started with a mystery illness, and your doctor prescribed medication, meditation, sleep. How did focusing on sleep transform your life?
So yes, I still was a type A overachieving perfectionistic patient in this case, and I researched everything sleep because I was a journalist. So that was
Right.
my impulse.
Yeah.
And in doing that, I also hired a Buddhist monk. But in doing the sleep and holding boundaries around sleep, it really showed me my own self-trust,
Yeah.
my own self-love, and it also showed me the parts of myself that didn't want to slow down,
Right.
that wanted to kind of like skim over the top with
Yeah.
overachieving and overserving and overdoing and over responsibility and trying to make sure everyone else was okay
Yeah.
before me. But I realized if I'm not okay, then the people around me
Right.
are not okay. And it's like put your oxygen mask on first before you help your neighbor.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I really learned that, and it woke me up to what is actually important in my life. And
Right.
it was being resilient, being available, being kind, being nurturing, being authentic. And knowing through this kind of inner stillness and this new, I guess, discipline,
Yeah.
who I really am, what I really wanted, and why I'm here.
Yeah.
And it just spurred this creative part of me
Right.
that was never kind of allowed to expand
Right.
because I had put it in a narrow set of parameters
Yeah.
that I thought was acceptable. So yeah, it really changed my life. And I pivoted from being someone who worked from home, parented two small children all day, and
Yeah.
worked on my deadlines for the magazines all night, and
Right.
traveled 30 to 50% of the time, sometimes overseas,
Right.
to someone who wanted to be home, parent her children, not sleep deprived,
Yeah.
and really help others to sleep and to sustain creativity on demand
Yeah.
and avoid burnout because I knew how to do it and
Yeah.
I knew it was working for me when I entered into this integrous relationship with my body, with my circadian health, and with
Right.
sleep hygiene.
I love it. And how did it lead you to develop the reset, rest, reset, liberate process?
Well, I just kind of tracked the work that I was doing on myself and
Yeah.
realized that in order to to start to reset the nervous system, we need to be getting enough rest and enough
Yeah.
sleep. And that helps to in-source safety in the body and
Yeah.
also create resilience. And then it expands the aperture of the nervous system to
Right.
be able to sit in discomfort. So that's where you get to the reset part of
Yeah.
rest and reset. And then once the nervous system is reset and it's resilient, and it opens the aperture for a broader range of emotions to be experienced without discomfort. They're just observed. So that leaves a space and an opening to question the mind. The mind, a lot of the time, is telling us things that aren't true because the mind is kind of hooked into the ego. And so when we begin to question, what is the mind telling us? Or maybe we'll question, what is this emotional response that I keep having? Or what is this unconscious belief that is controlling my behavior? And because we're able during that reset phase to sit in discomfort, it creates a beautiful, safe space to examine the inner work much more deeply and much more comprehensively. And that is where liberate comes from. Because when you clear limiting beliefs, and when you clear and integrate these emotional traumas and triggers, you are liberating yourself from them. You're opening yourself to have new thoughts and make different decisions and take different actions and get new results. And so that's where the liberate part comes in, is really doing the inner work, the self-examination, and then integrating those parts that just want to be seen and heard and honored. You just needed a little bit of patience, resilience to deal with them, and then everybody becomes integrated and liberated. And the word integrated, integer, actually means whole. And whole is the root of the word healed. So, in holding boundaries around sleep, it really woke me up.
I love that.
Like.
I really do. I really do. Now, for someone listening tonight who struggles with sleep, what are three simple things they can do to start immediately to improve their sleep?
First thing is consistency. So go to bed at the same time every night and wake up at the same time every morning. Another thing that they can do is dim the lights to 50% at sunset and then before bed, 1 hour before bedtime, cut out any light from screens, and also try to make that kind of your wind down time. So I would also encourage, not eating a rich meal or heavy foods more than, more than 3 hours before bedtime. I would try to eat before sunset. And then just making the sleep environment cool. Optimal temperature for sleep is 65 degrees. And the reason that is when you shift into that deep restorative sleep architecture, your body temperature actually drops, the core temperature drops. So I would definitely create a ritual around setting the thermostat for sleep. So, and of course you don't want any light pollution or noise pollution. And a lot of the time you can do some really simple economical fixes, which is use a silk eye mask, or there are portable blackout curtains that you can order, and really keep the light pollution and the sound pollution out, if at all possible.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Now you have an amazing event coming up very soon. Can you tell us about that? I believe it's on Sunday, I think, right?
So this event is for the spring equinox, and it's called Visionary by Design. And it is a signature process that I created to, again, get still and look inwards and see what has been forming beneath the surface. So beneath the surface of what we do every day for our jobs, or beneath the surface of what we do to keep busy or to be entertained. It's really what is the matrix of your life experience and what is it culminating in and what wants to emerge? So it's really about looking at that stillness and that creation and doing it in a group setting because it's the group energy around that is very enriching and it helps to evoke maybe some creativity and some ideas that have been sleeping in you and haven't slowed down enough to give them space because most people don't need more discipline. They don't need more willpower. They just need spaciousness. So we'll be meeting on Sunday and we'll be holding space for your life experience and what has been forming in you and what wants to emerge this year. In 2026.
I love that. Now, your book, can you just give us a little synopsis of your book and tell everybody where they can find your book?
It is The Sleep System, 28 Days to Better Sleep. It is a pragmatic guide to designing the sleep that you love because it uses design thinking to deconstruct unhealthy sleep habits and reconstruct a healthy sleep hygiene. And my book is available at my website, which is just meganmazoko.com, my first and my last name. And you can get a regular copy or you can request a dedicated copy. And the sleep system is also available as a white label. So it's available to organizations who would like to license it for their own branded sleep initiative. So I have additional ISBN numbers that are available for organizations who want to support the cognitive health and the mental well-being of their workforce, of their associates, without invading their privacy. And just giving them a tool. And that's beautiful.
I love that. That's an amazing. I think your book is amazing. And I love the idea that you can, resource it to other areas, other people, organizations, and they can actually be able to utilize it and really, take away a lot of the great information that you provide in the book. So that's wonderful.
And the
Now,
last thing I wanted to add, just because it says 28 days. The book has a longer shelf life than 28 days. It actually is a journal in the back. So it's a dream journal. It is for brain dump lists. It is for any kind of gratitude practice that you implement, which again leads to better quality sleep.
I love that. I love that so much. Now, what other services do you provide?
So I provide one-on-one transformational coaching, and I coach on six levels based on the Bechdar model of consciousness, and that is your beliefs and your emotions determine your thoughts, and your thoughts determine your decisions, your actions, and your results. And the six layers that I coach on are emotional mastery, somatic coaching, behavioral, which is only 5%, really, because 95% of our behavior is unconscious, and then mindset work and also unconscious limiting beliefs. And finally, on an energetic or an auric level, I'm a certified Reiki practitioner, so I can evaluate what is happening on each of the chakra levels and what is maybe out of alignment or needs to be connected. I also have a community on Patreon for people who are interested in group coaching and also in my quarterly workshops. And it's called The Sanctuary by Wellbeing by Design on Patreon. And there are a few tiers, a few membership tiers. And we always have a great time in our group coaching, which is facilitated so that whatever someone is going through, they can get something out of it. And I'm also available for facilitation and keynoting. My keynote called Sleep in the City, Connecting Rest and Relationships, connects the dots between the loneliness epidemic, the mental health crisis, and the sleep epidemic, because I think that's a really important discussion that is not being had, that we really need to treat work like a sport and make sure that we're getting all of the rest and recovery that we need. Because again, that is the first step to really engaging yourself in the deeper inner work.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And for all the listeners out there, we live in a culture that glorifies exhaustion, but the truth is, sleep isn't laziness. Sleep is biological intelligence, and that the people who learn to protect it may actually have the biggest advantage. And if today's show resonated with you, please, subscribe to our podcast and learn more about ways that you can enhance, practical sleep habits into your daily lives to improve your overall health. And I have to say, Megan, I thank you so much for coming on the show today. Sleep is such an important factor in our lives, and sometimes people don't realize that when you don't get enough of sleep, how much damage it could actually do to your mental health, to your physical health, to your spiritual health. And it could really, really destroy your whole body in more ways than we can manage. And even our communication at work and at home gets affected also. So I have to say thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge with us. And you really taught me a lot today. And I really thank you so much for being here and for taking the time to share your knowledge and also for what you're doing, because people need more people like you out there that can really direct them and guide them in a way that's going to improve their overall health. Because that's, sleep is one of the main things that people struggle with, all over the world, and they have a hard time actually falling asleep, getting good sleep. And, so thank you so much for what you do. You're amazing.
Casey, thank you so much for having me. And it's just been so lovely to speak with you and an honor to address your audience today. And it is my hope that everybody gets something out of what they heard, whatever they need, and just know that they have permission to rest. Sleep is not a luxury. Sleep is what champions do on purpose.
This is amazing. Thank you so much, Megan. I hope you'll be back on the show. And I love today's conversation with you. You're an amazing woman. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Stacy. Safe journey, everyone.